We're doing the book of Shoftim, and we're up to the story of Pilegesh Bagiva, the concubine on the hilltop. We had learned last week the story of Pesal Micha, the story of a man who set up a temple and idols in his house, and ultimately the tribe of Dan, or a few families of the tribe of Dan, took that northward, as we painted on the map, the northern tip of Israel. The northern eastern tip of Israel is the tribe of Dan. Now we're up to Pilegesh Bagiva. So the Navi recounts the story of Pesal Micha and Pilegesh Bagiva, the concubine on the hilltop, at the conclusion of the book of Judges. We will see in the story of Pilegesh Bagiva, there will be great civil war. The tribe of Benjamin will almost be annihilated, and the people of Israel will consult with the Kohen Gadol. Who is the Kohen Gadol at the time? It says the Kohen Gadol was Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aharon. Pinchas. So if the story is written in chronological order, at the end of the period of the judges, so then the story of Pilegesh Bagiva transpires a few centuries after Moshe's passing. We have the period of Joshua and the whole period of the judges, and then the story of Pilegesh Bagiva, the grand finale. And that means that Pinchas has lived to a few centuries old. That's the simple reading of the Navi. Our tradition, as is recorded in the Braisa Seder Olam Rabbah, is that these two stories actually happened in the first period of Judges, that actually these two stories transpired in the very beginning of the period of Judges, and the prophet Samuel, who wrote the book Shoftim, did not want to begin the book of Shoftim with these stories, so he concluded with these stories. Others want to say that Shmuel was coming to stress the need for a king. That's why these are the two places where the Navi says, Ein melech b'Yisrael, there's no king in Israel.
And
Pesal Micha and Pilegesh Bagiva. The two stories are juxtaposed. And in both stories, we have that line. Pesal Micha, Micha establishes an idol and a temple in his home. He takes a young Levite to be his priest. And then the tribe of Dan kidnaps the Levite and takes the idol and establishes the temple in their territory in the north. That's the story of Pesal Micha in a nutshell. So, we have no king. There's a Levite. His concubine, she is a Pilegesh. Pilegesh comes from the word plag isha, half a woman. They are only half married. There's no real contract between them. And he discovers that she's been unfaithful. She allowed her hair to grow where it could have castrated him. That's one opinion in the Talmud. There was a rock in his soup, another opinion. So she hasn't been doing her end of the deal. And he gets upset at her, so she runs away to her father's house, to Beit Lechem in the tribe of Judea. Okay, so let's take a look at our map. If we look at our map, so where's the marker? Okay. Beit Lechem is right here. Okay. So she has traveled south. Remember, he is a man who lives in the mountainous regions of Ephraim. That's here. Yes, Ephraim is north of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is bordering between Benjamin and Judea. And then you go northward, you reach Ephraim. Yes? So the mountainous regions of Ephraim. Now remember, we've had trouble with the people of Ephraim. The shepherds of Ephraim were those who started civil war before. They were the ones in the story of Gidon, in the story of Yiftach, they were the ones who came in both instances and said, what are you doing starting a war without us? And then Yiftach went and killed them, right? Yiftach killed masses of the shepherds of Ephraim. So Ephraim has been the source of civil war in the book of Judges before. And so this man, this Levite, remember we encountered a Levite in the previous story. Remember the Levite? Yes. The Levite who came to deal with Micha came from the mountainous regions of Ephraim. The whole temple of Micha. Micha also lived in this whole territory here, right? And then the Levite who came to be his priest also came from Beit Lechem. Okay? So now, in the story of Pesel Micha, Micha lives in Ephraim, and the Levite migrated northward from Beit Lechem to Ephraim. In our story, we have a Levite living in the mountainous regions of Ephraim. And his wife comes from Beit Lechem, comes from the south. And she has migrated northward, and when she's upset at him, she goes back south to Beit Lechem. So far, okay? So that's easy to remember. Micha came from the mountainous regions of Ephraim, and this Levite in the story of Pilegesh Begiva, we never learn his name. Now, there's something very difficult about this story, and that is that our sages say that he was actually a very pious person. According to some, he was even a prophet. And as we hear the story, the Navi doesn't seem to portray him in such a positive light. But we'll continue. So, our story begins. The woman is improper. She runs away for 4 months. She goes back southward to Beit Lechem. And he comes back. He wants to comfort her. He comes down to Beit Lechem. He has his lad. He has his donkeys. She comes to her father's house. She meets him. She brings him in. And his father-in-law is very happy with him. And he insists, stick around. They're there for 3 days. They eat, they drink. On the fourth day, he gets up bright and early. And he wants to leave. And his father-in-law says, have a good meal, and then you'll go. So he has a good meal. They eat, they drink. His father-in-law says, do me a favor, spend the night. You'll be feel good. You'll leave. And the guy says, no, I got to go. And the father-in-law says, stay. And he says, I got to go. And he says, no, stay. And he argues, and finally he sleeps. Okay, so he gets up on the fifth day. He gets up bright and early. His father-in-law says, have a good meal. Wait till the day is out. And so he eats with the man, and he gets up to go, and his father-in-law says, look, it's already getting late. Spend the night. Why should you start on your journey? It's already so late. You'll sleep well. You'll get up early. Tomorrow you'll leave bright and early. And the man refuses. And one of the lessons we learn from the story is not to detain people. Sometimes you have a guest who you enjoy, and you want to detain him, and it's not right for them. They'll end up driving when they're tired. They'll end up going when it's not safe. That was one of the lessons, the practical lessons we learned from this story. Your guest has to go, you let him go. So he wanted to ensure Shalom Bayis, but you have to respect the guest too. So the man refuses, and he starts traveling. And remember, he's traveling northward. From Beit Lechem, he's traveling northward to the mountainous regions of Ephraim. He comes to Jerusalem, and he sees all the cities that are still under the control of the Yevusi. And that's another indication that this story occurred before the beginning of the book of Judges. Because in the very beginning of the book, we conquered Jerusalem. So he sees all these cities that are inhabited by the Yevusi. And his lad says, why don't we spend the night in one of those cities? And he says, no, they're not Jewish. I am going to a Jewish city. We will pass to the next hilltop and we will sleep there. Remember, this is all in Benjamin territory. So he is traveling from Judean territory in the south, Beit Lechem in Judean territory. He has to go through the tribe of Benjamin to reach his territory, the tribe of Ephraim. He's a Levi, but Levim have cities all over the country, right? So he's a Levi that lives in the region of Ephraim. So they come into this hilltop, and they're in the center of town. And everyone walks by them on their way home. It's the Friday afternoon, and no one invites them in. And an old man comes, and that old man also came from the mountainous region of Ephraim. So here we have another person from that territory, but he has migrated to the tribe of Benjamin. So he's living on that hilltop. So he sees the guest, and he asks him, where are you going and where are you coming from? So the guest says, we're coming from Beit Lechem to the region of the mountains of Ephraim. I come from there. I just traveled to Beit Lechem, and en route I intend to stop in Shiloh. Remember, look at the map. Shiloh is within that area, the mountainous region of Ephraim. He says, I'm on a pilgrimage. I'm on a religious journey. I'm going to be stopping off and praying and no one's inviting me home. Now, I don't understand why, because I have so much food. I have what I need. I have what my animals need. I have what my people need. All I need is a roof over my head, and no one's inviting me in here. So the old man says, okay, so then the only thing you need is a roof. That I could give you. Come, don't go to sleep in the street. Come to my house. He invites him to his house, and the man gives his donkeys to eat, and then they cleanse themselves. They sit down to eat and drink. They're having a pleasant meal, and suddenly, now the Navi describes this as Anshei Ha'ir, Anshei V'nei V'lial. The Navi says, the men of the city, the men who do not have the yoke of heaven upon them. And the question is, why did the Navi use that dual terminology? Why does it first say the men of the city, and then it says the men who don't have the yoke of heaven? So some want to say that the Navi is purposely telling us that this wasn't everyone, it was just those, the gangsters who came. And others want to say the exact opposite, that that's why the Navi begins by telling us the men of the city. This involved the important people of the city too. This was a hilltop that was completely corrupt. They surround the house and they start banging on the door. And they tell the old man, we want the man who came, we want to know him. Which most commentaries understand to mean to know him biblically. So they want to violate this man. So the old man comes out and he says, brothers, don't do this evil act. Oh, so it's sounding like Sodom. So one difference, the Ramban lists a long list of differences between the story of Sodom and here. Don't forget, this is a hilltop. This isn't the whole country. This isn't the whole city. This is one hilltop. It's a hilltop where you see the people were gangsters. Another question is, was it everyone in the hilltop or was it just the gangsters of the hilltop? The major issue is going to be that the tribe is going to try to cover for them, that the tribe of Benjamin will stand by these criminals. That's going to be the major issue. The fact that you have a hilltop of gangsters, unfortunately, that can happen. So the man comes out and he says, don't do such a disgraceful thing. The man's my guest. He's in my house. You want, I have a virgin daughter. You have his concubine. I'll take them out. You'll do what's right in your eyes, but don't do such a disgraceful thing to him. And they refuse to listen. And here comes the line, there are two lines which are very difficult to read in this whole story. They're difficult when Chazal tell us that the man is a positive person. So this Levite from the mountainous regions of Ephraim takes his concubine and pushes her out the door. And the question is, why is that permissible? Was it permissible? So they afflict her all night long, and as the morning comes, they release her, and she comes as the morning, as the sun rises. She falls by the entrance to the house, and he opens the door to leave, and he sees her falling. And the Navi paints such a picture, her hand is on the door, on the bottom doorpost. And he tells her, get up and we'll go. Which is the second line that's very difficult to understand. After everything she's been through, that's what he tells her. And again, Chazal tells us he's a positive person. And there's no answer, because she's died. They were so violent with her throughout the night that she's died. And he takes her on the donkey, and he goes back to his region of Ephraim, and he slices her body up into 12 segments. And he sends each tribe other than the tribe of Benjamin. Remember, Ephraim and Manasseh are two tribes. So he's also sending to the other side of the Jordan. And he sends it with a message. A human body is one whole, and no part of the body can live without another part. We, the people of Israel, are one whole. And if there's some gangrene, if there's an infection in a part of us, it affects all of us. No one can ignore this. And so he sends messengers to the leaders of each tribe. And when people see this, they ask what's going on, and they hear about what happened, and they say, nothing like this ever happened in our history. and we have to do something. And so the people are all excited and upset, and they decide they must do something. And so the whole people of Israel, from the very north, from Dan to the south to Beersheba, to the eastern side of the Jordan, everyone unites. They all come together, armed forces. You have almost 500,000 soldiers. And the leaders gather and ask, what are we supposed to do? You have 400,000 soldiers. And the tribe of Benjamin hears that Israel has gathered with their weapons. So the tribe of Benjamin should have come and said, what's going on, guys? Silence. The tribe of Benjamin doesn't say anything. The people of Israel unite, and they say, how could this have happened? And the leaders meet up with the man, the Levite. Again, the Navi conceals his identity. The man, the Levite. And he tells them, I came to the hilltop of Benjamin with my concubine. We wanted to sleep. They surrounded us, and they wanted to kill me, and they tortured her to death. And so I cut her to pieces, and I sent her throughout Israel because of such a disgraceful act. Halachically, what was supposed to be done to the people of that hilltop? So halachically, you have no witnesses. An individual can't walk in and tell a story. Halachically, in order for the courts to do something, you have to have witnesses. He's not pointing a finger at someone. He says, I came to the hilltop. This is what they did. Who did? What witnesses do you have? So what happens here is what we call a hora'at sha'ah. The Talmud tells us, we have a Tosefta that says that a man once took a woman and was intimate with her under a tree, and so they killed him. Why did they kill him? Because technically, he was going to destroy something. Sometimes, even though the act doesn't deserve the death penalty, but the act is going to destroy something publicly. And the fact that the people publicly did such a thing, and the tribe of Benjamin knows of it, and they're silent, so that deserves an extraordinary reaction. Ordinarily, the only one who can do such a reaction is a king. The king has a right to execute without answering questions. The king has a responsibility to ensure the ethics, the ethical fiber of the people. And so the king has a right to react harshly. We don't have a king yet. But if all of the people of Israel unite, and they all agree this is what should happen, they're entitled to do it. So they decide they're going to do it. So they send word to the tribe of Benjamin. They take a vow and they say, no one's going home. We have not come equipped. We don't have food. How are we going to go to war? Okay, we'll take 10%. Will be responsible for preparing food. So they draw lots, they decide which 10% are responsible for preparing food, and they send word to the tribe of Benjamin. They're not yet starting war, they're prepared for war. The tribe of Benjamin is well aware of that. But they ask the tribe of Benjamin, what happened here? How did such an evil thing happen in your midst? Give over the evil people of the hilltop, we will execute them and eradicate evil from our midst. We have a concept of ir hanidachat. Sometimes a city can adopt such evil practices that the whole city needs to be destroyed. So the people of Israel turn to the tribe of Benjamin and they say, we'd like the perpetrators of this crime to be handed over. And the tribe of Benjamin refuses. Now the tribe of Benjamin has 12 families at this point. And they unite, and they prepare for war. They have 26,000 soldiers, aside from the people on the hilltop. On the hilltop, you had 700 soldiers, so this was no small hilltop. So you have 26,000 against 400,000. Okay, we'll subtract 40,000 who are preparing food, so 360,000. 26 against 360, so they're outnumbered 10 to 1, but that doesn't scare them. So the people of Israel unite, and they ascend through Beit El, and they ask Hashem, who should lead to war? They don't ask Hashem, should we go to war? They ask Hashem, who should lead? So Hashem says, Yehuda always leads. So Yehuda leads, and they go to war, and they lose 22,000 men. So the people of Israel lost the first war. 22,000, almost 10% of the army has been killed. Out of 36, 22. Okay, so that's 7%. 7% of the army is lost on the first day. Why? Because we just learned that a whole tribe adopted a pagan god. The tribe of Dan, or a part of the tribe, set up a temple as their official temple in that section of the tribe of Dan. And everyone was silent. No one thought they have to go to war for that. So what are the people of Israel saying? When there's a chilul Hashem, when people will blatantly go against the Torah, we fight for it. So Hashem says, really? When it was something that bothered my honor, I didn't see any of you fight. You feel like it's against your honor to have such a vile act in your midst. But what about paganism that's not vile? Ah, that's God's honor. So for that, you were all silent. And so the first battle they go to, the people of Israel lose 22,000. And they weep. And they figure, okay, Hashem told us to go, we'll go. They ask Hashem, should we go to war again with the sons of Benjamin, my brother? This time they ask the question. They don't ask, will we be successful? Hashem says, go. They go to war a second time, and they lose another 18,000. So now they've lost 10%, 40,000 Jews dead. 40,000 out of 400,000, they've lost 10%. So they come back to Beit El. And we'll pause for a second. So, Am Yisrael asks Hashem, they ask the Kohen Gadol. We mentioned earlier that's Pinchas, the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron, who our sages say actually lived a very long life. And they ask, should we go out to war again? Should we go out to war against Benjamin, our brother, or should we stop? And Hashem says, okay, go up, and tomorrow I will let you be victorious. I will give them in your hands. And this time, Am Yisrael prepares an ambush. This is a very important lesson. Even though Hashem promised them they will be successful, they knew they had to do their end of it. And so they prepare an ambush. And they start the attack. And the tribe of Benjamin starts heading out towards them. Now we should just appreciate how talented the tribe of Benjamin was. It says over here that the tribe of Benjamin could... they had 700 marksmen who could stand at a great distance and hit a hare with their rock. That's how accurate they were. So the tribe of Benjamin is prepared. They start attacking on the third day again. And again, if we look at this from a dry halachic vantage point, tribe of Benjamin is in the right. You don't have witnesses, no one warned. You're taking one man's word for it. You cannot administer the death penalty here. On a national level, the people said there has to be a radical reaction here. This is radically evil. And so the tribe of Benjamin starts their attack. They're sure that they're going to win again. They figure it's just a repeat performance of what happened the first 2 days. And what they don't realize is that the people of Israel are retreating in order to draw them away from the city, and the ambush goes into the city, and they have 10,000 men going in, starting to destroy the city. And the people of Israel are fighting. Now they've turned around and they're waging a battle. And the tribe of Benjamin loses this battle. Even without the ambush, they've lost 25,100 men. So the tribe of Benjamin is almost completely annihilated. And when the tribe of Benjamin sees that they're losing, they start retreating, they turn around, and they see the city going up in smoke. Now they're really scared because they got nowhere to run. Now the people of Israel start giving chase, and as the tribe of Benjamin is running, they call out, surround them, don't let them escape. And they kill 18,000 men, soldiers, and they try running away to Sela Rimon, and that's where they kill the remaining 5,000. And they keep chasing after them to a place called Gidom. They kill another 2,000. That's how we hit the 25,000. 100 was on the way. And they run out to a place called Sela Rimon in the desert. We have 600 men left of the whole tribe of Benjamin. And the people of Israel go back to the tribe of Benjamin and wipe out the whole tribe. Women, children, elderly, nothing's left. Only those 600 men in the desert. And here we see that they gave a halachic ruling that the tribe of Benjamin would be considered an ir hanidachat. Just like if there's a city that's decided that they're going to adopt a path that's unethical, so then we have a mitzvah to annihilate the city, there can come such a point. So too, that's what the people of Israel ruled on the whole tribe of Benjamin, because you have to ask yourself, what did the women do wrong? What did the children do wrong? What did the babies do wrong? They annihilated the whole tribe of Benjamin, almost nothing left. Now, if we learn that this happened the way it's written in chronological order, so then from these 600 men, you have Saul and his father and his children, because Shaul, according to the simple reading, was only king for 2 years. And that story happened, we'll have to see how many years pass. Let's say it's about... No, it could be that Shaul lived later. But Saul and his father were one of the people, one of the survivors. Shaul and his father. So you have 600 men out in the desert. And the people had taken on a vow, and they said, no one's giving their daughter to marry into the tribe of Benjamin. They come back to Beit El, they weep, they cry, they pray, and they say, Hashem, what do we do to deserve this, that a whole tribe has been annihilated? They set up an altar, they offer sacrifices, they pray, and then they say, we took a vow that any tribe that did not partake in this war, that means they sided with this vile act. And they check out and they discover that the people of Yavesh Gilad, we will revisit the people of Yavesh Gilad, they did not partake of the war. And so they go and they wipe out the city of Yavesh Gilad. They say only the virgin girls will be allowed to remain living. There are 400 virgin girls. They send them out to the desert, to the tribe of Benjamin. They say, look, we want you to have a future, that we still need wives for the 200 remaining. So they say, you know, we took on a vow that no one's going to give their daughter to the tribe of Benjamin. So what can we do? There's a holiday in Shiloh. Let's look at our map again. Where's Shiloh? You guys see Shiloh? Northward, right? Benjamin, then Ephraim, then Shiloh. Shiloh is within the tribe of Ephraim. The girls go out and they dance in the vineyards. You, the tribe of Benjamin, go, and each of you should take a wife from the vineyards of Shiloh. And then when their relatives come and ask us, hey, what's going on here? Help us get our daughters back. We will tell them, don't be so upset. We need the tribe of Benjamin to have a continuum. Let them have those wives. So the question is, didn't people hear about this? You have 200 men from Benjamin coming back and hiding and grabbing the girls off of the vineyards. So we don't have clarity as to what happened here. What we do know is that the Mishnah in the end of Tractate Tanis recounts that when they had a shidduch crisis, they had girls who couldn't find a match and they had guys who couldn't find a girl. So then twice a year they'd have this dance where the girls would go out to the vineyards and the guys would go out to the vineyards. Anyone who could get a shidduch the normal way did not go to this dance. It was the people who couldn't find the shidduch the regular way, whoever couldn't find a match, the guys and the girls who didn't find anyone, would go out to this dance, and there they'd meet and they'd actually find their wives there. So it's possible that when they had this dance, it was anticipated that they would end up with a guy. They just didn't expect it would be a guy from the tribe of Benjamin. And the Navi does not recount that the people were upset when the daughters were taken by the tribe of Benjamin. It gives us a little bit of food for thought that this whole story began when the tribe of Benjamin took a woman against her will, and the story ends with the tribe of Benjamin taking women. We might think it was against their will. We have a record of King Saul, who stood there at the edge when all the girls were dancing, and he did not take a woman, and his wife came and grabbed him. So that, you know, it doesn't sound like the girls were so upset when they were being taken. And you also see the Navi does not recount that people got so upset. The tribe of Benjamin was told, don't worry, if people will get upset, we'll calm them down. But it doesn't say that they ever did get upset. And so the Navi concludes with the tribe of Benjamin being given a future, the tribe of Benjamin with their 600 men were all ensured that they would have wives. The Navi tells us that the tribe of Benjamin retained their sovereignty over their land, and there was no king in Israel at that time. Now that's an interesting point. Think about it. If today you knew that a whole city was annihilated, there was no one left in a huge section of Israel, and only 600 families left, what would happen? People would start going and taking from that land. They'd say, no one's living here. The owners are dead. That didn't happen. Israel respected the sovereignty of the tribe of Benjamin. And that's why the Navi stresses everyone went back to their tribe. Everyone went back to their lot. No one tried to take from the tribe of Benjamin, even though the tribe of Benjamin had dwindled down to 600 families. Those 600 families retained the section of Benjamin. And so even though there was no king in Israel and everyone did what was right in their eyes, most of the time, that was a tremendous compliment to the people of Israel. That you didn't have central authority, and yet most of the time, the people were tremendously ethical and moral. And when there were exceptions, the people reacted very harshly, as we see here. So there's no king, there's no central authority. We're each left to do what we think is right. And yet, you see, everyone respected the sovereignty of the tribe of Benjamin. No wise aleck came and grabbed land. People lived tremendously ethical lives. And that leads us into the book of Shmuel. And some want to say that the man we're about to encounter, who comes from the mountainous regions of Ephraim, and he is in fact a Levite, Elkanah, the great prophet and tzaddik Elkanah, is actually, in fact, the same Levite who was married to the concubine. So that's, I always have a hard time with that.
Elkanah
but
is in Hannah's wife?
Correct. Elkanah is a descendant of Korach. So Korach had seen a prophetic vision that he would have a giant come out of him. He was right. Shmuel would come out of him. He thought he was the giant. Korach was certain he was the giant. No. His descendant, Shmuel, was the giant. So Elkanah has two wives, Hannah and Pninah. Hannah is one of the seven prophets, female prophets. Pninah has many children, Hannah has no children. And Elkanah is the leader of the time. And this is how we begin the book of Shmuel, where Elkanah would travel throughout the land, educating people, inviting them to join him in his path up to the temple to Shiloh. And at the time, our Kohanim are Hophni and Pinchas. Their father, Eli, has just been appointed the high priest, the Kohen Gadol. And Elkanah goes up to Shiloh with his wife, his wives, Hannah and Pninah. He brings food for Pninah and all her children. He tries to give Hannah a beautiful portion, but she's very upset, because Pninah is always taunting her over the fact that she has no kids. So even though he gives her a great portion, she leaves off crying. She's not eating anything. And he says, why are you upset? Don't you know I love you more? And she just walks away crying. And it is the day that Eli is inaugurated, and he sees her embittered, walking into the holy, and we'll pick up here, Bezrat Hashem, next week.